Welcome. I am delighted to share with you self-awareness, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual through new thought, exploring relationships, health and healing, true prosperity, and metaphysics. These topics embrace transpersonal psychology, realizing that we are more than bodies, minds, inherited tendencies, genes, conditioning, or programming. Transpersonal psychology goes beyond the persona, meaning going beyond. We are spiritual beings going through a human experience. The topics were recorded in front of a live audience at the Victoria Center for Self-Awareness, where I was the founder, then the director, for 25 years.
After the meditation, we'll have a few moments of silence to envision world healing, world peace, and having food distributed to all on our planet. Noticing our thoughts, releasing any thought of the future or the past, presencing ourselves to the present moment right now, remembering to breathe deeply and consciously. Envision a silver white light moving up your spinal pathway like a spinning silver disc of light, lighting up your back all the way up to the back of your neck, the back of your head, and the top of your head. Now focusing our attention on the point between our eyebrows, very powerful center. Know that I speak these words for me and for you in the I person. There is one presence, one power, one God, the fullness of wisdom, creativity, and unconditional love. Being omnipresent, it expresses not only around me, but in me, through me, and as me now. Today, right here and now, I open myself to a greater recognition and realization about the truth of myself, to identify with my spiritual higher self in a deeper, greater way. The infinite's presence and power expresses itself through me as joy, love, creativity, and peace. And it is my consciousness as my moment-to-moment life and activities. I free myself from useless references to the past. I live deep instead of fast. I allow life to fully enjoy me. I focus on who I really am, and I allow others to know me, to know the real me. I draw strength, wisdom, courage, and guidance from the divinity I innately am, and I come out of hiding, and I just open myself to my full expression now. I'm thankful for this conscious realization this morning. I'm thankful for each person gathered here in spiritual community and those at a distance who aren't present to us. I'm thankful for my world and universe and my relationship to them. And most of all, I am thankful for life itself. And so it is. Thank you. My topic this morning is J-O-Y, joy, but J-O-Y as an acronym, just open yourself. Just open yourself. Our center is a new thought center. It's not so much about that there's new thoughts being presented to you. These aren't new thoughts. But when we take on a thought that maybe we hadn't entertained before, we can have a new life, a new transformed life. So we teach spiritual principles and we teach metaphysics, which is beyond the physical. We teach that energy and matter obeys the intent of consciousness. Therefore, we co-create our life experience. We are co-creating our life experience. Sometimes people's life experiences are like movies. Ever think of that? Do you ever think that we're the producers, the directors, and the actors in our own movies? So think about what kind of movie your life would depict if you were to make that kind of analogy. Would it be an adventure? Would it be a love story? A romance? Would it be a documentary? Would it be a horror story? Would it be a Bible epic? Would it be a musical? A drama? Action? A comedy? Sometimes comedies can be real dumb and sometimes they can cause genuine laughter. You know, our movies, they're getting better all the time, I think, but you really have to be selective about them. Some of them definitely raise consciousness. But some of them cause, as some television programs, cause our energy to weaken. And it can suppress our thymus gland. It can insult the brain's delicate neurohormonal and neurotransmitter systems. So we're not only talking about movies here and TV. Sometimes people whose lives are like that, and they're sharing their horror stories or their drama or their, what I call their yama-yamas, it can impact us just as much as sometimes watching a movie or a television program that doesn't empower us. So today in Joy, Just Open Yourself's topic, three things I want to address. I want us to look at how open are we? And remember, whenever I ask a question of you, in my preparation, I always ask the question of myself and really look for the answers deeply. Do I let in? Do you let in joy? And do you let out joy? Do you let joy out? Number two, to creatively examine some ways that we can open in our lives, be more open in our lives. And number three, I've got on the whiteboard there, live deep. Live deep instead of fast. Live deep instead of fast. And live as an acronym is life, love, individualized, vitally expressed, experienced, and enjoyed. Okay. I heard many, many years ago at a New Thought International conference that one of the speakers said this statement, and it's kind of stuck with me, and I think it's absolutely true. Joy is the unmistakable evidence of the presence and power of God in your heart. It's the unmistakable evidence of that. So I'd like you to ask yourself some questions about when you were growing up. Where were your parents as far as joy and expressing joy? When I think of that, there was hardly ever any laughter in our home, except maybe when company came, and I especially had an uncle that was really a joy to be around and had a lot of jokes to tell. And that's about the only time I heard laughter in our home. Where did your parents come from with laughter, with joy, with the talking about joy? What was said about fun? I'm pausing just for you to kind of reflect. What was said in your home growing up about play? Was anything said about your home, in your home, about delight, about joy, about happiness? Were you and I given time to play? Or were we overstructured or overscheduled? And I really believe that a lot of children nowadays are. I think it's a little too bad that none of them are here today with their parents. If we have an overstructured young life, and overscheduled, it's very easy for us to become workaholics. It's not the only reason people become workaholics, but they can become workaholics because of that. They can get involved very much in their adult life in the hurry, hurry sickness, always being in a hurry. There's also another thing, and I'm just going to coin a new word. We can do that anytime, you know. Planaholism. Planaholism. That's feverishly being overscheduled with an array of jobs, appointments, busyness. Busyness. You know, so many times, sometimes people come, they haven't been here for a while, or maybe they haven't been here for a few weeks or a few months or a few years, and sometimes there's almost tears in their eyes when they say, I really miss this place and I really want to be here more often. And then the but is, I'm so busy. And I think to myself, I wonder what they're busy doing. Not like as a judgment, but like, is it busy doing being involved in something that will enhance your life, and or is it something that you can take with you when you go? And I'm not talking about holidays either. I'm talking about an elevated consciousness. Okay, sometimes people overschedule themselves to avoid facing getting to know themselves, or avoid facing getting to know their loved ones or who they are with. Do you know there's actually some people who are uncomfortable when their life becomes too joyful or peaceful? They get a little nervous. So they create projects and dramas and crises and emergencies because they're just not used to that kind of a life. It's uncomfortable to them because they're just not used to it. Planaholism is governed by an adrenaline rush, an adrenaline fix that creates a frenzy when drama falls below a specified threshold. And our obsession of doingness is at the cost of our beingness. It was interesting, I listened to the tape of our guest speaker last week speaking on passion and purpose. Early this morning I listened to it, and she actually mentioned that quite strongly about in her topic of passion and purpose. Too busy doing instead of reflecting and looking at what brings us joy in our life, what makes our heart sing. So, do we let joy in, and do we let joy out? You know, here's the thing. Sometimes, I don't think there's ever such a thing as being too joyous. But sometimes when some people, or maybe you've had this experience yourself, you're really excited about something or happy about something or joyful. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be excited or enthusiastic to be joyful. But I'll use that as an example. But sometimes we're just like that. And you know, you ever notice it makes some people uncomfortable? I've noticed that. It was really brought up straight to my face one time many years ago in a communication workshop in Calgary. I was taking it. It was part of the S training stuff. And I got so much from the first hour and a half of that workshop. I was high. I guess that's the only way you could say it. And we got off into little groups, and we were sharing. And I was sharing, so I was just so excited. And someone in the group said, "Get real." I can't even remember exactly what she said, but she, like, it wasn't permissible or acceptable for me to be that happy or joyous. It was interesting, though, at the end of the workshop, after how many hours, it was quite intense and late, couple of evenings, she actually came to me and apologized, which I think was good for me and it was good for her to do. But just notice that, you know, and like, so what? It's not about what'll people think or what'll they say. If you're happy and excited and full of joy, express that more, show it more. I mean, you know what? It's infectious. Sometimes people say, "Stay away from me, I've got cold." And I say, "Well, come and catch some health." Well, how about catching some joy? We usually like to be around joyful people unless we have something going on, like a drama going on that that we want to kind of get in there and keep playing. I heard someone speak one time about an unusual sweepstakes. Now, you know, this is pretend, but let's pretend together. An unusual sweepstake. That you'll be paid, what if you would be paid $100 each day? That would be $3,000 a month, $36,500 a year, and within 30 years, $1 million, just from that $100 a day. But, there's a but, you see. The $100 a day, this is what you were required to do. Incorporate 5 ways to experience and express joy and loving yourself every day. And put it into your regular activities. It could be the same or different every day. But you must record it and submit it to the sweepstake office in order for you to get your $100 a day. The only rule was that you can't say or do anything that would harm yourself or another. So if there was such a kind of sweepstake, and I know some of you are saying, "Well, there isn't such a sweep." But what if? What if there were? What would you do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that would be in your beingness and doingness. How would you be to actually have that $100 coming to you? A helpful hint would be to list 50 things and activities that you savor. I expressed this a couple years ago when I was talking on a similar subject. I said, you know, like, you have this little sheet in your program all the time, topic notes. And some people take notes down, some don't. We find some of them in the recycle, and some of you leave them behind on a seat with really good notes. And I think, wow. But at the bottom of it, I'm trying to remember exactly what it says, but it's something like what I will do, the action I will take. So it's not only about coming and feeling good and hearing good music and hopefully a good talk and being with people, but it's like, has it made a difference in your life? Can you take something out of it and can you put it into your life so that it's practical for you and it makes a difference? So, you know, making a list of 50 things you savor. I did that on the computer and I've got it typed out, and at least a couple of times a week I look at it and I think, okay, am I on track so that I'm at least doing and being with and actioning and activity, things that I say that I love to do or savor. And it's not only about doing this. So I invite you to do that. One of the great New Thought ministers that I heard speak several times was wonderful. I actually went to his church down in Detroit, Michigan. And he had a way of saying it this way. Is life enjoying you today? Is life enjoying you today? So many times we think, am I enjoying life today? And that's good. But is life enjoying you today? And he asked us to get into the habit of when we have this sense of that we're kind of feeling good and maybe not even in touch with that we're joyful yet, to say, gosh, I'm really enjoying myself. To say that to ourselves. To say that to ourselves. And actually really look to see how that shifts for us. You know, two things can't occupy the same space at the same time, and neither can two ideas in our consciousness. Gosh, I'm really enjoying myself today. Gee, I'm really enjoying myself right now. Like that. A number of years ago, there was a lady that used to come to the center. She put on a party that I was invited to, and a number of other people were invited to. And she, I don't exactly recall exactly how the invitation read, but we got that only 5-year-olds were supposed to come. So in other words, we were to show up in the party as a 5-year-old. We didn't have to specifically dress in costume. Some people did. I had so much fun at that party. But what I realized was, you're going to find out something about me now. I was raised with 2 Polish parents. A lot of rules. And there was pretty bad punishment if you were bad. Well, I decided at this party for me to have fun, I would be a little bit bad. I do naughty things. They were cute, and people laughed, but I did have fun with them, you know? Bless you. So, you know, it's not about that, you know, joy in our life is when we're bad, but I got to see that I wasn't allowed that kind of full self-expression when I was growing up, you know? And of course, if I ever was bad, no one ever laughed about it. But I can't remember, really, I can't remember any time when I was bad. And it wasn't because I wanted to be. I was fearful. I was fearful. So just, you know, kind of like that. So do we ever look at laughter as being like cosmic juice? Someone once said that we pretend we're separate and the contagion of laughter reminds us that we are one. Reminds us that we are one. So I have a couple of little stories here this morning, and I hope you'll find them enjoyable. It's about being careful what you wish for. A man and an ostrich walked into a cafe. Some of you may have read this in a little magazine lately. And the waitress said, "What'll you have?" And he replied, "A burger and a Coke." And the ostrich said, "The same." And then when they were finished with the meal, she said, $4.50. He reached in his pocket and he had the exact change and put it out. This goes on every day of the week. And on Friday, she says, "What do you want?" And she says, "Do you want the same?" And he says, "No, today I'll have a steak and a Coke." Okay, and the ostrich says, "Me too." At the end, when it's time for him to pay, $10.50. He reaches in his pocket and he had exactly the same amount of change. The exact same amount. And the waitress was kind of dumbfounded and she said, "You always have the exact same change. How come?" And he said, "Well, I was cleaning my attic and I found a lamp and I rubbed it and inside was a genie." And the waitress said, "Wow, you wish for something?" He said, "Yeah, I wished for that whenever I needed to pay for anything, the exact amount would appear in my pocket." "Amazing," she said. "Most people would have asked for $1 million. She said, "But what's with the ostrich?" He said, "Well, I also asked for a chick with long legs." Yeah. So here's one. A wealthy man was having an affair with an Italian woman for several years. One night during one of their rendezvous, she confided in him that she was pregnant with his child. Not wanting to ruin his reputation or his marriage, he said that he would pay her a large sum of money if she would go to Italy and secretly have the child. And if she stayed in Italy to raise the child, he would also provide for that child until the child was 18. She agreed and asked how he would know when the baby was born. And he said, to keep it discreet, simply send him a postcard in the mail and write on it spaghetti at the back. He then would arrange for support payments for the child. So one day, about 8 months later, he came home to a confused wife, and she said, honey, you received a very strange postcard today. He said, oh, give it to me and I'll look at it and explain it. The wife handed it to him, and she watched her husband as he read the card, and he turned white and collapsed. On the card was written, spaghetti, spaghetti, spaghetti. Two with meatballs and one without. Request bread. I thought that was funny. I thought that was funny. All right. So how can we open more to be more open for this J-O-Y, just open ourselves? Just a few things. 5 points I'm just going to make very quickly. First of all, laughter. It's like... are you willing to find your H spot? That's your humor spot. Are you willing to find and are you willing to jiggle it? You know, inserted in your program today is something that I insert once a year in June. It's called the Mirthquake Preparedness Test. And I do it every year when it's inserted in the program just to see how I'm doing. But I ask you to take it home and really score yourself and just see where you are with it. And, you know, down at the bottom it says severe case of chronic seriousness, your attitude needs adjustment, etc., up to healthy, and then you're kidding yourself. So it's a good little quiz, and it was given to us by Terry Braverman at an International New Thought Conference. So that's number one, laughter. Number two, so many of us have heard about appendectomies, hysterectomies, mastectomies, vasectomies, and prostatectomies. How about a pastectomy? How about a radical pastectomy? Releasing anything that ties you to the past in an unhealthy way. Some of us kind of would like to hang on to it. You know, in March we have the spiritual focus is release, let go, purify for Easter. So it's about cleaning up and cleaning out closets and clothes and papers and cards in your office and your home and your desk. But it's like, not only that, it's relationships, and it's about stuff. I'm telling you, when I go and see some parts of my family, and I see how some of them hang on to stuff for years. I'm not talking about 1 or 2 years. Thinking of one person in particular right now, 40 years hung on to something. Will not let it go. So, letting go of anything from our past that, you know, when we think about it, it depletes our energy. Discard whatever doesn't empower you in the moment and for the future. That's a huge thing to look at in our life and really action for ourselves because we love ourselves. Number three, to shift and reframe and be... I like the terminology that Alan Cohen used in some of his books years ago. He's a wonderful speaker from Maui. Wrote the book, Dragon Doesn't Live Here Anymore and Joy Is My Compass. And he talked about being a blessing extractor. Are you willing to be a blessing extractor? He was telling the story about someone was driving home one time and decided to stop and watch a Little League baseball game going on, and he sat behind the first baseline, and he asked one of the little boys, what's the score? And he said with a smile, 14 to nothing. And he said, really? You don't look like you're even discouraged. And the little boy said, "Why should I be? We haven't been up to bat yet." You know, it's like that. You know, become as a little child. You know, sometimes people think about how to accelerate their abundance in their life. Have you ever thought of this? Be willing to name everything good. Be willing to name everything good. Is there something bothersome in your life? Maybe to look at it this way. It's reflecting a part of ourselves that we haven't fully come to terms with. I'll say yet. Some people say, "Well, there's just some things I can't smile about and I can't laugh about and I can't label it good." Well, maybe we haven't seen the whole truth of it. Something like A Course in Miracles would say, and I'm paraphrasing probably, "God, help me to see things differently. Help me to see the good here, even though it's not like kind of in my face." Trust that the higher power is operating grander than our perception at the moment. And remember to take a deep breath. One of the speakers was doing, in Winnipeg at the conference, was doing an exercise that I'm actually want to do with the board. We're having a board meeting this Wednesday. Nothing new really, but the way she presented it and the kind of exercise it was, and she was making an illustration on the board. And then she was working with somebody in the audience who was brave enough to stand up and say that one of her things was guilt. And I won't go into the whole thing, but what was so great about Jackie Darby, who was the presenter at that time, she really was with the person as she was working with her, and she kept saying to her, "So breathe," because she kept getting into different things, looking deeper, and some heavy emotions came up, and she just kept reminding her, breathe deeply. And of course, intimacy, into me see. 2 weeks ago, just before I left for Winnipeg, I said that I was going to do a topic, and I did, what it's like being me. And I do that every 10 years, what it's like being me. And it's to create deeper intimacy between people at the center and myself. And I talked about four things, four H's. And I'll tell them to you in a moment. But at the conference, it started Friday night, but all day Friday, from morning till dinner time, the ministers and speakers and presenters got together and just, we had a format, but we shared with each other. And one of the things that I shared was what I had said in my topic about these four H's, because it creates intimacy, into me see. And that is letting somebody know what's in your heart. It's the first H. The second H is, what are your hopes? Sharing your hopes with people. The third one is, how have you been hurt? What are you hurting about? Or maybe in the past you've been hurt, or maybe you're hurting now. And what do you need for help? H. So those four things can really develop into a deeper relationship, whether it's friendship, whether it's your significant other. What about with our children? What if we spoke about those things with our children? You know, my mom and dad died when I was younger. I was 16 when my mom died, and I was 19 when my dad died 3 years later. And you know, I'm really, you know, I say now, since my husband died 4 years ago, live without regret. It's one of my regrets that I never took the time, never thought of it, to tell you the truth. I didn't have the consciousness that I have now, to talk with them and learn about them and find out about them. Wouldn't it have been wonderful to have asked them those four H's? Mm-hmm. Psychologists agree that one key to sound emotional and mental health and to never have a breakdown is to have one person in your life that you can share your heart with. That you can share your heart with what's in your heart. You know, here's the key. Sometimes people don't even know themselves. First of all, you have to ask those questions of yourself and ask yourself those questions so that you can really share it out there with other people. Do you know what's in your heart? This is opening yourself up to you. What are your hopes? How have you been hurt, and have you spoken to somebody who could apologize or do something about it? Now, where do you need help in your life? And are you specific about it and willing to risk and put it out there and let people know that you're needing help there in that way? Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important to take workshops like Free the Heart, which we are going to be having again in October. We bring it twice a year. And in September, a 10-week series that I facilitate called Love at the Core. Many of you have taken it. Singing is another area of opening our heart. I already mentioned that earlier. We feel joy. You know, I get, I ask, there's a little teenager that comes to the center, and she likes to earn extra money, and she's been doing this in other ways, but she comes to my home every second week and vacuums my home for me. And what's so great about her, she puts on these little iPod or MP3 player in her ear, and she sings out loud while she's vacuuming my whole house. Amazing. It's wonderful. And then if I want to tell her something or change something, I have to come up to her, and then she has to, oh yeah, okay. Back she is, and she's singing. Reminds me to sing when I'm doing some housework. Acknowledging people, appreciating them, acknowledging yourself, appreciating yourself. That brings joy in your heart. That opens your heart up. So the last point here today is live deep rather than fast. Live deep rather than fast. Gandhi said, there's more to life than increasing speed. You ever notice how the movies are? Do you remember if you ever went to Indiana Jones, the first movie? Do you remember the first few minutes of that movie? You were on the edge of your seat, that big boulder coming down at us. I don't know if you remember that, but I was like, ah. Notice how some movies now are just fast. And it's almost like, and then the other day a couple of weeks ago, I taped a movie, and was it yesterday or the day before? I decided to watch it. It was called Ace of Hearts. And the reason I decided to tape it was about a dog, and I really like movies about animals. It was about a police dog, but it was such a heart movie. And you know what I noticed was, as I was watching it, I almost thought, this is too slow. But then I realized that I was enjoying it, and I was coming from programming that movies should move along a little faster and have more action to it. It was interesting because the setup was that a thief scratched his neck on purpose while the dog had taken him down properly, scratched his neck on purpose so that the dog would have to be put down. And then the dog escaped from the clinic and made his way back home to his policeman's home. That's kind of the gist of it. But what was also happening in there was the father, who was the policeman that had the dog, wasn't paying hardly any attention to his wife and specifically his teenage daughter. So there was a real heart message in that slow movie. And I realized at the end of the movie, I felt so uplifted and I wasn't like buzzed. You know, sometimes we watch some movies and we're like, buzzed. I noticed in the paper the other day, what's that name of that movie? Of the Lambs. Silence of the Lambs. I remember when I saw that first movie, my husband was working late and I got frightened watching that movie. And the real reason I did was because it's the truth that there is such a kind of guy going around, or was. So it's interesting. Do you remember in the movie Philadelphia, one of my favorite movies with Tom Hanks? Have you all seen the movie Philadelphia? He's a gay lawyer who has been discharged, and Denzel Washington is the lawyer that's going to represent him in the class act, in the suit against the lawyers. One of the most poignant parts of that movie, and whenever I watch it, I still cry. Tom Hanks is very low. He's lost weight. His name is Andy Beckett in the movie. And he meets with his lawyer in his apartment, and he's playing music with Maria Callas singing operatic. And he's walking around with his IV unit, and the camera zooms in on him in his ecstasy of being with the music and the singing. And Denzel Washington, as the lawyer, he gets so uncomfortable, he excuses himself, goes out to the hall, shuts the door, and leans against it. Now see, Andrew Beckett in that movie, Tom Hanks, showed himself, let himself be known at a deeper level. And even though Denzel Washington ran away and excused himself quickly, what did he do? If you remember the movie, he went home and he picked up his little daughter in the crib and held her and said, I love you. I love you. Now see, that's the thing about when we open ourselves up in the presence of others. Others are transformed in some areas of their life. So it's not only good for us, it's good for other people. Lorraine Jordan talked about the silence. She said, get out of your minds. Remember when she talked about that? It's not about, don't sit there, do something. Sometimes we have to, don't do something, sit there in the silence. So in closing, open yourself to delight, the light, delight, the light. I read someplace where there's a distinction between a sourpuss and a saint. A sourpuss sees daily interactions as a nuisance, and a saint sees a continuous stream of opportunities to celebrate. And I've been listening to CDs by David Hawkins in my little MP3 player when I take Rosie for a walk. And I notice how much he laughs in his presentation. You ever notice someone else who does a lot of laughing in his presentation? The Dalai Lama. He laughs a lot when he's in the presence of an audience where he's speaking. So I invite you to just open yourself. Stay in joy. Be a joyful expression for yourself and with others. And see the happening in your life. Are you willing to open up a little more?
Yes.
Yes. One or two of you are. Some of you aren't sure. Okay. God's presence and power within me acknowledges and salutes God's presence and power in each and every one of you. Namaste. Thank you. Thank you.